Hi everyone, and welcome to the EdTech Podcast, the show for everyone involved in education and innovation in and out of the classroom. Before we start, a few announcements. I've finally gotten around to putting a forward schedule together, which includes content up until June. I'll be posting about what's included, but you can also check out the EdTech Podcast calendar on Podmosphere or email for details. If you're interested in sponsoring, you can also contact us to view the schedule at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. Excitingly, Randy Zuckerberg has got back in contact about being on the show, so that episode also coming up in 2017. The EdTech Podcast is taking part in the inaugural London EdTech Week as a co-chair. More details coming soon, but you can check out the London EdTech Week link in the show notes, and it runs 19th to 23rd of June in, you've guessed it, London. Before June, we've got our first birthday party celebrations coming at the end of April. I'm putting together an episode focusing on you, the listeners. If you'd like to be involved, tweet me at podcastedtech or email at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to share as many of your voices and what you do as possible from around the world. And finally, next week features a takeover from language learning gaming company Wibu on language acquisition theory, English language teaching innovation, and how gaming can help. If you're in London next week, you can join them at the BAFTA building in Piccadilly on Thursday for their launch party. Details are in the show notes, and if Bubbles, EdTech and BAFTA wasn't enough, the founder of 90s game Lemmings will be in conversation. Right, on to this week's podcast. We're back with a Bet EdTech Trends episode looking at the state of EdTech in the UK and internationally. With word of UK EdTech Association NACE restructuring, school budget strain and service and educator frugal responses feature heavily. Also involved the Dutch school and embassy on importing into the UK and Joskos on why broadband is still a critical issue for UK EdTech take-up. Finally, the head of content at Bet talks about how to get involved in the next Bet as a content contributor. I hope you enjoy this episode, everyone. Thanks for all the great feedback to the Imogen Heap episode. She was a fascinating person to connect with. Keep your responses, shout outs and shares coming, and have a great week. Yay! We're here on Saturday at BET and I'm here with Caroline Wright, the Director General of BESA. Caroline, how's this week been for you?
It's been long. But it's been fantastic. So I'm just using more and more makeup as the week goes on to cover up the eyes.
That's an amazing strategy. I think I've adopted the same. But I was hugely impressed. You took your children swimming this morning.
I did. I think there's a lot of travel in what we do at BESA. We're, you know, away from home quite a lot, taking companies over to international shows and at events like this. So when I can get home, it's nice to actually do the kids stuff with the children.
So for you, I mean, you've been chairing panels this week, you know, you've hosted the BESA lunch, I'm sure showing various international governments around the show. What kind of conversations have you had?
Well, I think actually the week for BESA started at the weekend, because we had the Education World Forum. That's where we had 80 international education ministers coming to London, and they all descended on BET on the first day of BET on Wednesday. So for me, the flavour early on in the week was very much the international focus. We've got another 30 countries with either pavilions or delegations being sent to BET. So early on in the week, it was really a conversation about the UK education system. I was lucky enough to meet the French digital minister, Axel Lemar. We had Liam Fox doing a ribbon cutting on Wednesday morning, and we took him around to sort of a number of the key UK exporters to talk about actually post-Brexit, what's happening in terms of ed tech. And there's a massive interest around the world, and we've seen that. And so the Crown Prince of Norway even came on Thursday with the Duke of York.
And I know at the beginning of the week, I believe the government released their industrial strategy. So I was just interested to know your opinion on how that would particularly apply for ed tech as well.
Well, I think there were 15 strands. I need to go back and read it fully, because it's been a full-on week, but I believe there are 15 strands, and one of them particularly focuses on digital. Okay. And talking to some of the officials, and Robert Halfon, the Minister for Skills and Apprenticeships, came and spoke on Wednesday afternoon, and I was talking to him about it, and they're really aware of the need, actually, both at the school level, to be able to harness technology for young people in their learning, that then obviously translates into the wider economy. But one of the promising things about that digital strategy, and I believe sort of a little bit later on, sort of closer to the Chancellor's announcements in March, we'll hear a bit more, but I know that they're very much looking at their full fibre service. I think it's going to be prioritising the areas that are identified by schools that have poor Wi-Fi and broadband at the moment. So if they can get that right, that'll just make it so much easier for the companies here, that obviously their businesses and the support services they provide are really, really predicated by schools having good access to kind of basic broadband.
Absolutely. And I know that now there are some particular individuals that are looking at EdTech within the DfE and BIS. Mm-hmm. So,
which is really positive.
Yeah, so yeah. That's a positive step.
And they spent, the really positive thing is actually that team spent, I know, 3 days walking around BETS, really getting a feel, talking to teachers, talking to the exhibitors, talking to kind of international visitors, really improving their knowledge at a grassroots level. We even had the permanent secretary of the DfE, Jonathan Slater, spending an afternoon with us on Wednesday. And actually, he was really quite excited by some of the things he saw. So I think that's a positive thing that we need to work on. So it's exciting that the government does appear to be showing an interest in tech. And I'm hoping that we'll see that coming out in a digital strategy soon.
I kind of missed this, but I know Justine Greening originally was going to speak and couldn't in the end because of a
She was
a vote
due to come on Wednesday afternoon. And I know I saw her on Monday at the Education World Forum, and she was very much looking forward to it. But then there's a school funding debate in the House of Commons that obviously is an opposition debate. As a Secretary of State, she had to be there for it. So she was very sorry, sent her apologies, but she managed to arrange for Robert Halfon, the minister, to come and speak instead of her. So it still shows a commitment, and hopefully next year there won't be a parliamentary debate in the way.
Yeah, they've got to stop scheduling them. I mean, interestingly, I was following EWF on Twitter. I think if I'm correct, so a lot of that discussion with the international ministers was around the fourth revolution idea, or industrial revolution idea, and this push towards digital skills, 21st century skills. Did you get a sense of perhaps the nuance between countries and, you know, where people are in that journey?
Absolutely. There's a lot of debate, and different countries come from different aspects, depending on kind of their needs, their cultural needs of their countries, their historic skills and so on. So it's, and the good thing, the really positive thing about the World Forum is they get the chance to debate amongst themselves and actually share learning. So a refreshing honesty among ministers of actually where something hasn't worked as well as they would have liked in a country, and actually talking about how they can all build on that in their own environments.
I really enjoyed Gavin's sort of mini speech yesterday at lunchtime. I thought that was fantastic. So talking about the feelings of, so Gavin Dykes, the feelings of when you're thinking about your teachers, and I think my word was warmth. I think yours was kindness.
Yeah.
Focusing on those attitudes and values as opposed to just sort of the knowledge end as well. So
absolutely, and that was part of the focus that BETS, we brought together kind of some of the key exhibitors, some of our key stakeholders working in EdTech, and actually it was just a warm lunch to actually remind ourselves, and I invited Gavin to speak because we can find ourselves in a BET bubble, which is fantastic, but actually just Gavin Dyke sort of really refreshing, just look at actually why is education important, why are we all here doing this in the first place, which I think is quite grounding.
And I also love the fact that you said, you know, it's actually just about sitting down and having a meal and sort of having 5 minutes.
Well, I think I've lived off pork pies for much of the last week, so it was quite good to actually have a whole meal.
Well, there's nothing wrong with pork pies, but we've got Patrick here, Patrick Hayes as well. I'm not sure if this was the case this year, but I understand with BETS, you usually release a report around this time that looks into some of the key findings that people at BET would be interested in.
I understand this is actually the best attended BET ever. It actually takes place with the backdrop of significant cuts in funding for ICT in education and for EdTech more broadly. ICT leaders and head teachers across the UK are saying that they anticipate a 7% cut in their ICT budgets for the year ahead, which at a time when there's so many new innovations that could potentially transform the classroom, it is a real tragedy. And I think in general our members welcome the idea of ensuring that the right products are in the classroom and they're actually having the impact that they designed them for. It's a very altruistic sector. I mean, of course, there is a financial element, but it's a very altruistic sector in that people aren't just developing things to make money, they're developing things to make an impact. And that's certainly something that we at BISA care very much about. I mean, a lot of them, especially in the BET Futures area, are former teachers who actually are setting up and developing new products because they kind of realise if they don't do it, then they won't exist, and that teachers could really benefit from their development.
I don't know if you have a sense of on the show floor or the exhibitor makeup, but whether there's a particular trend. I mean, obviously, a lot of people this week have spoken about VR, for example.
I would actually say I think efficiency is one of the key trends that I would talk about at BET this year. It's people developing products to try and help better manage workloads and also to help schools deal with financial management in a different way. So, for example, one of the highlights of the BET Futures area this year that a number of government officials expressed a real interest in seeing was Work 2, which is set up by a former teacher who saw there being a lot of inefficiencies in the supply teaching sector and wants to effectively develop an app which is very similar to, say, Uber for supply teaching that will connect schools and teachers, charging schools less and giving teachers more and cutting out the middleman. So there are these interesting innovations around efficiency that we're seeing coming through at the moment.
I think there was Teacher In similar to that come over from Australia.
Recruitment providers that are looking at that sector in a lot of detail at the moment, aimed at disrupting, because it's not just always about fighting for the ever diminishing budgets within the ICT sector. It's also about finding new innovative ways to disrupt the education sector, to find new ways of doing things, to shake up the model. And BET is fantastic for that. I mean, obviously you see products on sale here, but you also have the sharing of ideas. You have the fantastic arenas, you have the BET Futures area, where people are coming together all the time with leading thinkers, but also with teachers and people actually working in the sector to exchange ideas about how to transform education.
And what's next for you both? Because I know you're super busy and you have your calendar of events and international delegations. So,
following the Brexit vote last year, our members are looking overseas more than ever before. In fact, 3/4 of our members say they want to do more to export as a result of the Brexit vote. So they're really looking internationally, even at the startup level. So even in year one, year two of a startup, people are starting to say, actually, I want to go and explore the Middle East or China. It's unprecedented and a very exciting time. So we'll be in February and March leading a mission to Vietnam. We'll be going to Guest Dubai, which is one of the big shows outside of the UK, where I think last year we took 80 companies. We hope to match that this year. So we'll be very internationally focused, but at the same time still doing a lot of work in the UK. It's a very rapidly changing sector with the rise of multi-academy trusts, for example, and it's very important that our members keep abreast of all those changes and understand how best to succeed in the changing procurement landscape.
It's very interesting you mentioned that. I met a teacher yesterday. She was here with £6,000 to buy 2 robots. She knew exactly which supplier, and when she got there, the price had gone up, the supplier mentioned, because of Brexit. Mm. So, she went home empty-handed because she wanted to kind of reconsider. But, those changes are taking effect, I suppose.
It's a double-edged sword, really. I mean, obviously, for things that we import and materials we import, the price, due to the devalued pounds, is going up. But actually, for many of our suppliers, there's a real export opportunity because the pound is devalued. It's much cheaper to export than it has been previously. When I recently went on an EdTech mission to China, people were saying, I was saying, why are you interested in British products? And they said, of course, because it's the home of Eton, the well-renowned British education system. But also, it's like there's a 20% off sale at the moment, and we can get this discount because of the devalued pound. So there are very strong opportunities to export abroad at the moment, but it is a double-edged sword, because if you're importing components and parts, then actually those are much more expensive.
And so for people listening in, how can they follow up with what's happening at BESA?
Go onto our website, BESA.org.uk, sign up for our newsletter, or drop myself or Caroline or any of the BESA team an email. We're always willing to talk to you. If you're from a school, we're very happy to discuss which suppliers best meet your needs. All of BESA's members sign up to a code of conduct, which means they can be trusted, and there's an independent means of accountability. And if you're a supplier, come to us to talk about how best to export overseas.
And you're at BESA Tweets, aren't you?
We are indeed.
Lovely. Yes. I'm here with Mark Chambers, the CEO of NACE.
What we're trying to do is bring together a voice that is about advocating for the use of education technology, the appropriate use of education technology, to improve outcomes for young people. This has been our kind of our mantra for a very long time. We became very, very interested in the subject computing during the National Strategies days, and we are still interested. But we've reaffirmed that we're interested in not just the subject computing, but in the whole school use of the tool that is education technology.
And outside of computing, I mean, what do you think are the main applications that schools or individual teachers should get excited about? Because there is really something there.
I think the power of technology has always been to bring learning alive and to make it relevant to the experience of a young person. So it's quite interesting that actually kind of going full circle to when I first started teaching back in the 80s. But at that time, I was a geography teacher. And I couldn't convey to the young people some of the concepts of geography without them using technology to kind of bring alive what I was trying to talk about, whether it was the processes within a river or a waterfall or a beach. And that was technology.
And so what would you use then?
At that time, yeah. Modelling.
Modelling, okay,
and the ability for us to kind of see things happen much more quickly than would happen in a geological process. Okay. And it was tremendous. It was kind of invigorating as a young teacher at that time. And I've seen sort of patterns of that happen and repeating as new areas of technology have come in. And what we have now with virtual reality is, again, a tremendous opportunity to take to a new level that bringing alive of the experience of young people so that they can be in both enthused but also empowered by the application of the technology to do new things.
And so on the flip side of that, so what are the areas that you think actually we could do better in terms of getting the benefits out of EdTech?
Well, I think there's a real challenge for us in what I might term as the average school across the UK, where we have incredible pressure from the accountability system for results in a narrow range of subjects. And we have colleagues in schools, senior colleagues in schools, interpreting this as almost a myopic focus on, okay, let's look at English, let's look at mathematics, let's look at the EBAC subjects at secondary level, and focus simply on the processes, simply on the strategies that help us to improve in those subjects. Actually, education technology helps you in that challenge. Mm-hmm. And we're forgetting that in so many schools across the country. And we're finding that in the average school that I've referred to, education technology is being deprioritized because it's expensive, because you have to manage it well to do well with it. And this, I think, is the biggest challenge in the certainly the English system with which I'm familiar, but perhaps in many schools across the UK.
And I know we were both at the government meeting recently, sort of looking at some of these consensus points around, you know, where the sticking points or sticking areas are for EdTech and how we could improve those. So, I mean, just going back to sort of that curricular point or making it, you know, too narrow a focus, what would some of your preferred solutions be for some of those areas we discussed?
Well, I think what we have found through the membership, and basically I report the findings of the members and what people are saying to me, if you like, is that when schools realize that applying technology helps to emancipate the learning, to kind of take learning to new levels, helping them to do things in more real ways, in ways that are relevant to their experience outside of school, young people are not only kind of challenged to be engaged, and we find that is kind of the historical reason for using technology. And many people say, oh, you know, the kids are engaged, the kids are motivated. But actually, it makes a difference to outcomes as well. Mm-hmm. So using the technology can actually help the young people because it is contextualized for them, helps them to improve. And I think that's what we really need to focus on. So in English, you know, how can we improve outcomes using X kind of technology, or in mathematics, you know, how can we improve outcomes using the technology?
Accreditation comes up a lot in terms of there's this sort of huge swathe and constantly month on month, year on year of new products coming through, and how do teachers and educators identify, you know, what's of real value? But you have your own mark in this area.
Yes, we do, and NACE through its membership is able to work with suppliers sort of to endorse their products, to identify that which is good about the product, to identify the areas in which it's having impact, capture that as a case study, and then share it with schools. It's something we have only just started, really, because NACE has a proud history of its independence, and that's that's been both a benefit and also in the current climate where you know, government support for an independent organisation is not as forthcoming as it once was. We certainly are having to look at new ways of thinking and working. And NACE endorsement is a powerful move for us. Mm-hmm. It's our brand is well respected in many hundreds, if not thousands, of schools. And if we're sensitive and careful and we look at what people are doing and make sure that it is not just not just focusing on the engagement, if you like, but mm-hmm. focusing on the improvement, then we'll allow them to use our endorsement.
And so how can schools engage with you on that if they're interested in finding
out? We have school membership, and schools are welcome to join NACE and to use the tools that we have within our portfolio that have been created by members. And that ranges from using the self-review framework to reflect on how technology is being managed effectively and led effectively in your school, through to the individual essential guides that the members have written. An essential guide to the use of QR codes in the curriculum, or an essential guide to using technology to save 8% of your school budget. That's a particularly timely one, perhaps.
Okay, yeah, it's probably quite a popular one, that one. And I know that recently there's been a few changes within the NACE organisation. So for those new members that have come in, or new people in the leadership team, so that others can connect with them, can you introduce some of those names as well?
Sure. Our current chair is Dr. Carol Porter from Bury. And Carol has been working in the primary sector very effectively for many years. And she is, as our current chair, an excellent advocate for our community. We have Donna Vaughan, who is one of our vice chairs. She works in Northern Ireland, working with schools there. And Malcolm Payton in Scotland. And I was just reflecting on the coincidence, quite frankly, that this is a kind of a very happy time for NACE, because we truly are a UK organisation and a UK membership association. But in addition to that, those officers of the voluntary board, if you like, we have also Martin Bailey from Animate to Educate, and Patrick Carroll from a school in Doncaster, Drew Buddy, trying to find new ways of developing, because it's hard for teachers who are so rightly focused on what's happening within their classroom to join in a wider community. And we're very, very keen to find ways to make that happen.
Thank you very much, Mark. I know you're on Twitter.
I'm on as NACE CEO, or yeah. TW Mark Chambers.
Lovely. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Sophie.
I'm really pleased because I've just bumped into Drew Buddy. But Drew, I know a lot of people follow you on Twitter and really interested in your opinion on what's happening here, and, you know, not getting sucked in too much to all of the marketing speak. So what are the actual things that you think are interesting and engaging, and, you know, things that you'll take away with you from this week?
Well, I've only had a cursory trip around the exhibition so far. It's much bigger than I remember. It's certainly every year at the Excel, it seems to be one hall longer, and it certainly must be today, because it's taken me so long to walk from one end to the other. I'm interested to see, and I'm not surprised by the introduction of VR technology I've seen around. I still have my doubts about how that can happen in school, because the size of device you need to do that is a mobile phone, and so many schools ban mobile phones. And I think that's what maybe many of these companies don't get, is that it might be all well and good you can have VR in school, but no school really has kids using phones that will let them do that. So I'm not sure how they go over that hurdle, unless you've got a class set of phones to use, and I don't know many schools have that. I've been down to the Steam Village. I really love the Hello World magazine the Raspberry Pi have helped put together. It's a really beautiful thing.
And so is that different to their usual magazine?
It's just come out. It's called, I can't show you on a podcast, but it's called, it's subtitled Papert's Legacy, with a wonderful feature on Seymour Papert. Yeah. And it's freely available. Yes, he died last year. It's freely available. It's also downloadable in a PDF form, and I loved it so much when I heard about it last week, earlier on this week, that I printed from my printer a 100-page PDF to be able to read it rather than read it on the screen, and I've now come and got a couple of copies. I really recommend it, called Hello World.
Okay, so we'll put that link in there.
Yeah, definitely. It's a lovely thing. And what else? The Raspberry Pi and the BBC Microbit. Because every kid in year 7 last year, or year 8 this year, depending when they were given them, have got a Microbit, that's a great potential there, and I don't think that's been really used to its capacity. And so there's a couple of stands selling Kitronic, I think it is, who've got some kit that can go with your Microbit. What else?
Have you been to any speeches?
No, I haven't done any of those.
And have you had a chance to, I mean, I'm sure there's like a million people that you're meeting up with.
That's exactly what's happening, exactly. Because when I've been, this must be about my 24th BET show, and so coming to them, and because I've got quite a large network of people I know over the 20 odd years I've been teaching, when it comes, I spend more time talking to people, like, yes. I bumped into you, yeah. randomly rather than this being arranged, and that's what for me is the value of BET, rather than who's selling what, yeah. is the fact if you know enough people, it's a great place to meet people and then find what they're doing and maybe go together with somebody else.
And you've got the Teach Me this evening, yes. So you've had the 10th anniversary one, this is the 11th, I'm guessing.
It's an on-conference model, which means you don't have a keynote speaker. There's some Teach Meets these days that seem to have predetermined speakers, and a purist will tell you that ain't a Teach Meet. The exciting element is you put your name down to speak and you don't know if your name will be drawn or what order and who's speaking when. Last year we jiggled with that a little bit because I had somebody in mind I wanted to start it off with, who's now our host this year, Natalie Scott,
yes.
Who's gone on to become Teacher Blogger of the Year,
yeah.
And nobody knew who she was. This night last year, nobody knew who large number of people didn't know who Natalie Scott was, but when she came here, there wasn't a dry eye in the house when she told about teaching in the jungle. Yeah, I do, do remember them. People were offering all sorts to the jungle in Calais, where she was doing a voluntary teaching, and then she's gone on from there, and so she's one of our hosts tonight, and she says, you know, that she owes so much to just the fact that she spoke for 2 minutes about what she was doing.
The other thing I was going to say, so for you in your school in 2017, have you got any kind of plans that you, when you came here, you thought, okay, well, I want to implement or try XYZ, and looking at those kind of things, or?
So the micro bits were very frustrated with the way they were distributed last year. I thought that badly handled, and I've been vocal about that, but now that that we've got them, kids have been distributing them in my school, so that's 100 girls have now got a gadget to tinker with. How many will actually tinker with it is another matter, and I'm not sure that side of it's as successful as the BBC wanted it to be. Still, when you've got companies selling extra material that can go with it, that's nothing but helpful. So all my students have got a BBC Microbit, have taken it home with them, and it's up to them to tinker with. There's also the Young Game Designer BAFTA Award. So last year I had all my students enter that competition.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Good luck with all the preparations.
Thanks.
We'll speak again, no doubt.
Yeah. Cheers, thanks.
So I'm at the Dutch School Stand, which is being run by the Dutch Embassy, in collaboration with many startups. Out of the Netherlands, so I've got Linda Friedman, the CEO of Progress, who is also a co-founder of the Dutch School with me. So welcome, Linda.
Thank you.
So really, what I wanted to know and get a sense of is where EdTech is in the Netherlands, and just thinking about, you know, some of the startups who are here, like what kind of aspect of EdTech they represent, and what the main aim is here during this week at BET.
I think the Dutch School represents the best that the Netherlands has to offer in EdTech and innovation. The other thing is why we choose the BET is because the Netherlands itself does not have an educational innovative platform that we can show ourselves. So that's why we choose the BET. And there are a lot of Dutch companies here also. And I flew in yesterday morning and the whole plane was with Dutch education organizations. Boards and directors that are going to look here at the BET for inspiration for education. So it's the Netherlands are shopping here at the BET. So for us, it's crucial, but also good that we are standing here to show that we as the Netherlands also are up to par with the latest EdTech innovations. In the Netherlands, we have more traditional publishers that still think about paper publishing.
Yes.
And their transition for them to go to the digital world is a long one.
This is something that I've noticed here is, you know, you've obviously got mainstream education and you know, sometimes there's a larger organisation, so the change will happen more slowly. And so some of the alternative methods of education are sort of popping up around on the fringes and, you know, working out how they can just get out there in any way they can. So do you think... It sounds like, from what you just said, that perhaps innovation in the Netherlands is sort of slower than perhaps you'd like. And so, you know, you are trying to work out and innovate around that as well.
Yes. I think Well, the first thing is that I don't think we really have a platform to show ourselves in the Netherlands. And the other thing is that the edtech companies that are standing here at Tibet all have an international drive.
Yeah.
So they all already have tools that are both in the Netherlands already established, and now they have the drive to go abroad. And then the UK is for us a short step to do. I do think there's a lot of change in the education system in the Netherlands at the moment, but because it's also ingrained into the political system, because the Ministry of Education needs to approve the standards for new education, it takes about 7 years to change the curriculum, it's going slow.
And are there plans in place to change the curriculum?
Yeah, because we have we probably get a new government in March because we have election. And I'm not sure if the political topic will be education, innovation. So we need to wait for that. But I think slowly there's getting a sort of a vibe that education is the basis of everything, and that we need to look at our education system and bring it up to par, because there is a discussion in the Netherlands about jobs of the future, mm-hmm. and what do we need to educate our children to get them the jobs for tomorrow, and that all starts with education, mm-hmm. and I think technology innovation will be in the heart of that.
And obviously this is a kind of collaboration or a collective of different startups. So what are the types of things that are represented here as well?
We have primary, secondary and higher education tools, as well as soft as hardware. So we have a mix. The only thing that we wanted is that it's already a tool that's being sold in the Netherlands first, and then it's acceptable for international markets. That's the bottom line that we wanted to have as a Dutch school. Because the embassy is very close involved in this, and then of course you represent the Netherlands next with the embassy, so you want to have a good performance here and to show off what we can do as a Dutch. Yes.
And what kind of response and reaction have you had from people coming through?
Last year was the first time, this one is second year. It's very, people are very interested because I think we have a different stand, because you see that the large companies here have a sales team standing here. And here they're all founders and owners of your own tool. So there's a lot of passion here with people that have to pitch themselves their own tool.
Yeah.
And we hear that back a lot. They think the vibe here is pretty funny.
And you had some drinks last night.
Yes, of course.
We had some drinks last night.
Dutch beer.
Yeah,
Heineken.
Well?
We brought the Heineken. Yeah, we were kind
That's
of run over.
I went to a comedy show last night and I had a Heineken. So it's like I was doing it in respect. There you go. So.
Well, there were like five rows deep here.
Yeah, yeah, so I saw it.
Everyone heard there were Heineken beer, and then everyone would have the Dutch Heineken beer. So yeah.
And
it's
so
a good export product.
I Am Progress. That's your own company.
Yes,
so
yes.
What do you do?
We've developed a gamified assessment, and we measure soft skills in our games to put it back on the resume of students. So when they leave school, they get the hard skills on your resume, but together with our game, you also have your soft skills. Because companies nowadays want to see the soft skills more than the hard skills.
So that is really, really interesting. Because this morning I was at an efficacy discussion at Pearson's headquarters on the Strand, and afterwards they had a sort of round table. And my question to them was, you know, this is great because you're sort of measuring all the things that you would expect through the OCD piece of stuff. But my question is, how do we measure the soft skills or the skills that perhaps aren't as easy to document? So how do you actually go about documenting that?
Well, it's half of my company are psychologists and the other half are developers. So sometimes it's kind of a mindfuck, those two together. But we base our assessments on traditional assessments, Belbin and Kolb, and we just translate it into a game variety that really appeals to this generation. Mm-hmm. There's a smart engine behind it, machine learning, that measures everything that you put into the assessment. So it's not only you cannot cheat the assessment, because we measure a lot of things, the choices you make in the game, the answers you give in the game. So it's kind of a broader thing.
Is it a mobile game?
Yes, it is. No, it's not an app. It's web-based.
Okay.
So it's scalable on any device.
So what does it look like? Do you have a...
We have a... Which is funny. We have an... you don't have an avatar, but you play with an avatar because you can evolve from a paper plane to a rocket ship.
Okay.
And it means that when you're a rocket ship, you're ready to go to the labor market.
Yeah.
And you start as a paper plane.
If people want to follow up on what you're doing, how can they do that? Do you have a Twitter handle as well?
Well, they can look me up at LinkedIn. That would be great.
Okay.
Or otherwise, they can go to the website of www.iamprogress.com. It's in English.
Yeah.
So it's, and there's an info at iamprogress.com.
And from your sense of your colleagues here that are looking to export, is there a sort of trend in which markets they're looking to go into?
Because of the success we had last year at the BET London, we went with a select group of four to the BET Asia, and we got an award from the BET there. We got an award. And now we are going again to BET Asia, but now with six companies.
Final question. So for you as well, so do you sell directly into schools?
I sell... we've got two sides of coin, because for students it's free to play. We give it away for free to schools, and if they want a data analysis on the students, they have to pay me some money. And the other side is that we have a recruitment game for companies, because we can measure the vibe and the culture of the company, so the students know which sort of company fits them best.
Interesting.
So we can put them together.
Yeah, so when you've got your aspirational students and they've got their wonderful 21st century skills, it's trying to match up that they're going to the right organisation as well.
Exactly. So a student with competences X, Y, Z, we can tell them there's a recruitment game of us at that company, and he's looking for those exact competences. Play the game.
So are you going to get bought by LinkedIn?
Well, not every recruitment agency is thinks we're okay, because that's... they have difficulty changing their business model.
Yeah.
So this is kind of disruptive, which is sometimes a bit okay.
Means you're doing something interesting, perhaps.
Yeah, so there's some interesting conversations with recruitment agencies, yes.
Absolutely.
Because they think that they don't have any jobs anymore because of our tool. And I tell them, no, you can have a better conversation because I can deliver a more complete profile.
Yeah.
So that's the difference, yeah.
And is it Lika?
Lika? Yes, it is.
So Lika, you're based in the Dutch embassy here.
Yep, I am.
So is your role specifically on education?
No, my role is specifically on startups. Okay. So helping young Dutch companies who want to export, although it's not always export, but who want to go here on the UK market, and to help them out in many ways.
And if people are listening and they want to collaborate with companies and organisations under the Dutch school umbrella, how can they get in contact with you as well?
Well, they can always come in contact with the embassy by sending me an email, which they can find on our website, which is Holland UK Trade. But the Dutch school itself now is a platform in the Netherlands, and they have their own website too, and there is an email and a Twitter and info, so they can come directly into contact with the Dutch school too.
Thank you very much, ladies.
No thanks.
Cool, so I'm delighted to find myself on the Joskos stand. So I'm here with Nick, who's the CEO and founder of Joskos Solutions. And Nick, so it was funny, I was walking past and you've become sort of famous in my mind somehow because of social media, and I remember seeing all of your photos with
His Royal Highness the Duke of York.
Exactly that. So I'm glad you got there for me. And actually, why I was interested, and it's really great that we connected, because so I know that in terms of some of the barriers to EdTech infrastructure and this sort of actual backbone, so broadband, Wi-Fi, etc., comes up quite a lot in some of the meetings that I've been in.
Good.
And actually, it's just the basic infrastructure to get all these services on top. So could you tell us a little bit about Joskos, just to start with, and then we can talk about your experience this week?
Of course. So Sophie, it's a pleasure to meet you. It's been a great bet for us. Some of the highlights are spending time with our existing schools, getting learners onto our stands so we can really showcase some of the great things that we're already doing in schools, but also sharing with other schools what's possible.
Yeah.
So Joskos is an education-only ICT company. We don't manufacture anything, we don't produce any software or anything like that. We're fully, fully services-focused. So we manufacture and produce services for schools. We don't have a one-size-fits-all. We're not a one-trick pony. We're very much about what that school's looking for, both in terms of immediate outcomes in their classrooms, but also in terms of partnership with an organisation that can help them achieve those.
Okay.
So we're very, very focused on teaching and learning. Hardware's a great thing. You'll see a lot of those things, but I refer to the hardware element of it as a medium to squeeze out the outcomes that we're looking for.
Interesting. And so just breaking it down into some of those services then, so does that include, I'm guessing includes a broadband, Wi-Fi, also security services?
Yep. All of the above. And it's great to hear you saying that you're hearing more schools talk about infrastructure, because actually what we've found unfortunately at times, is that there's a lot of investment in the shiny stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, drawing a car analogy, you know, having a sports car, but not having the right road to be able to drive it on. So lots of investment in digital devices, both the infrastructure, the broadband, the wireless, the networking, the stuff that people don't often see behind the scenes isn't right. Then that all that's going to happen is that technology, you're not going to be able to leverage the best of that technology in that classroom.
Yeah.
That affects teacher confidence, speed, reliability, and as we say, learning time lost can never be regained. So first, point number one for us is always taking a look under the bonnet, what's the infrastructure like, and then really talking about those wider devices. But actually take another step back, understanding the school's vision and how we can make it come alive.
In the UK, what's your sense of, you know, what's currently mapped? Is it the usual story of, you know, it's just the fringes, it's the coastal areas, it's the rural areas? Where do you see in your business, you know, the demand for your services the most?
Across. So we are a small, growing business. Where we're seeing demand is schools that might be with some of the longer established. You know, we've been around for 15 years. However, we've grown from very organically with a, you know, north of 70% school referral, schools referring us to other schools. So that's been really organic growth. So London has where we've traditionally been. In the last couple of years, you know, we've seen demand from schools outside of London saying, look, JOSCOS, actually, and partners, you know, some of the bigger companies here, the big household brands saying, JOSCOS, we need partners like you in other parts of the UK that will challenge the status quo. So the demand has really been in London. So we service a lot of London schools. But in the last 2 years, we've moved out to, we've got staff now in Leeds, Scarborough, Portsmouth, Bristol, you know, just more and more across the UK.
Yeah, I mean, as I mentioned before, I used to work at Informa Telecoms and Media, and so I have had a bit of working with sort of the managed services providers.
Yep.
So you've got things like, well, everything from Alcatel-Lucent and your Huawei's and your Ericsson's and even traditional telco players like BT here. You know, if schools are listening in and they're sort of thinking about which way to go with this and scalability, if we're thinking about academies and that kind of thing, what's your perspective on some of those bigger players versus what you provide as well?
Great. It's a brilliant question. And, you know, it'd be great if more schools, school leaders and trusts, and certainly we encourage them to ask that question, you know, so what? What are you going to be doing differently? So, I open the papers every day. I watch the news like most people. You hear a lot about budgets being cut, some of the challenges that schools have, you know, the apprenticeship levy and all those other things. We see that as pure opportunity. You know, this is great in some ways. Yes, it's not, the headline's not great, but we feel it's a real opportunity for schools to challenge the status quo. This is what we have been receiving. This is what we have been delivering. But we have to do things differently now. How do we do things differently? So number one, there is no one size fits all. Yeah, a significant investment has gone into technology into schools historically. Mm-hmm. That investment just isn't there. So how do we approach that? Look at it from a, what has the school already got that we can leverage, both in terms of skills and technology? Where is the school going? And sometimes those scum schools don't know that. And it's a really, really difficult situation for schools. So that's where a partner like us can come and stand right by their side and say, you know, this is what other schools are doing. This is what we're seeing works. You have got opportunities with cloud, storage, different types of devices. The same level of investment is not required in terms of hardware and capital. And there are some much, much smarter ways of doing things. So leveraging the cloud is one. More and more remote support. Working with teachers in delivering outstanding CPD so that they can use the technology more effectively and in a more confident way. So there are lots of things that we can do, especially when it comes to trusts also.
Yeah.
Because I think trusts bring about a really unique situation where across the trust, you can really squeeze out better economies of scale.
And do you work with some of those academies?
Yes, yeah. Yes, we work with a number of them. So the Russell Education Trust, the Avanti Schools Trust, GEMS, City of London Academies.
And you work with Ruckus, so in terms of wireless or the Wi-Fi side of things. So can you tell us a little bit about how that works as well?
Yeah, so Ruckus is great wireless technology, really built with schools in mind. So there is no other environment that I've come across that is like a school when it comes to wireless, you know. X amount, 30 plus devices logging on at the same time. In a concentrated area, A ruckus that produce solutions that are great for that. So we've been a ruckus. They call it a top dog. They like referring to us as an animal breed, a top dog, which is one of their key partners for about 8 years, very, very successfully.
How do you align with sort of what the government's doing in sense of promoting the infrastructure and dealing with some of the perhaps the black spots? What's your view on if they're doing enough or what they could do more of?
I think the government's in a very tricky position. That's a fact. I think the government's got some great initiatives for what they're doing in a very, very challenging situation, given the economy, the old greater economics. So Priority School Build Program. I don't know if you're aware of that, but this is an initiative program to really go out there and improve some of those schools that don't have the infrastructure that they should have. So the government's investing significantly in that program. It's a program we're involved with, we've had incredible success with as a business. The government has something called the RM 1050 framework, which is really for free schools, new schools, studios, UTCs. Again, we're on that program.
That's what I was going to ask, actually. Are you primarily at the moment focused on K-12, or do you see yourselves as providing services from anything from like early years right up to higher education?
So we are already all the way early years through higher education. What we are seeing, going back to infrastructure, because you ask a great question, I'm really pleased you're talking about this, because it should be really up there, very high up on the agenda. Certainly with my school governor hat on, it very much is. All of these programs that we're seeing or we're involved with, there is actually a good, solid focus on investing in the right infrastructure, which is great to see. So, yes, the shiny bits are brilliant, but the infrastructure behind the scenes stuff is really getting a much, much bigger mention.
And then outside of the UK, do you work internationally or?
Not yet. We are very much a UK-based focused company. We're incredibly focused. Mm-hmm. We know what we do best. And right now that's geared and tailored towards the UK market. We've got a small single unit market share, which is growing. So last year we grew 35% top line. But more importantly, we invested significantly in making sure our services also grow. So being an education-only focused business, for us what matters the most is making sure we're having an impact in that classroom. You know, when we talk about our business, we don't really talk about the number of schools, we talk about the number of learners we support mm-hmm. in the classrooms within the schools that we support. How many teachers we're working with and where we want to get to from a teaching and learning perspective. A services perspective, we don't talk about downtime, we talk about learning time lost, which we just don't want to be associated with. So really, we see it as a personal responsibility to really support teaching and learning and making sure technology evolves there. If we were to go out beyond the borders of this country, we feel that focus might shift more than we want it to right now. So mm-hmm. we're remaining in the UK, very much growing across the UK, but we're not in other countries just yet.
Yeah.
It's coming.
And your own sort of background and getting into this area, what were you doing before you launched JOSCOS?
Okay, so interesting story. So JOSCOS started off as a training company in 1999.
Yeah.
I'd just come back from the US. I left high school with not the best grades. I'm dyslexic.
Yeah.
And actually, the teacher that stood out for me the most came to the stand, Mr. Morse, David Morse. He teaches in Chigwell School now. There was two or three things that... Can I share the story with you?
Yeah, no, okay? I'm all ears, literally, okay. Yeah.
So at school, it was challenging for me.
Yeah.
You know, I got support, but it was very challenging for me. There were certain subjects and lessons that really stood out. Business is one that I really enjoyed. Surprise, surprise. IT was the other one. And Mr. Morse, during break times, would teach me Q Basic and those sorts of things. So I really had an appetite, you know, back then for learning, because I think it was, you know, the reading writing was always quite challenging for me.
Yeah.
But interacting with technology was something that really I could do something and then I'd see an output there and then. It was the instant gratification of my mindset at that age in my life was great. Anyway, finished high school, not great grades. And I wanted to do one of two things. I either wanted to join the armed forces. Yeah. I have a massive passion for supporting the armed forces.
Yeah.
And instead, I said to my family, I'm going to join the forces. Having an uncle that had just come out of the forces, my mother said, no, actually, you're going to go and do something else. So I ended up going traveling. I came back at 19. I ended up in Florida. I ended up coming back at 19. I opened the papers, still with this passion for IT, and I saw an advert for a training company called JOSCOS. And they were promoting IT training courses. So I thought, great, let me go check them out. I traveled to JOSCOS in King's Cross and got a great feeling about this small business that had just started. It had three people. I signed up there and then to do a Microsoft training course. Started the training course within a couple of weeks. I got certified as a Microsoft Certified Professional. I got my first of seven exams out of the way. Really happy. First exam. Yeah. I really, really passed with flying colours. And I went up to the owners and said, you've got a great business. I can help you grow it. And they looked at me like I was a bit mad. Who's this customer trying to muscle it on the business? And they said, great, join us. So then I helped them promote the training business to grow that. A year after that, it was really clear that there was a bigger opportunity. Mm-hmm. So I went to my primary school and I went to the head teacher, who was still the same head teacher. And I said, what's your biggest challenge? And Mrs. Holder said, Nick, we've got a lot of technology, but the teachers don't know how to use it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it doesn't work. So at that point, I made a promise. I said, we can help you. Let us fix it for you. And we're not going to show, it's not commercial. It's just doing the right thing. That's where JOSCOS Solutions was born. So we helped the school to improve the situation in their classroom from a teaching and learning perspective with technology. I went back to Jerry and Carrie and I said, we can help more schools do this. That's when we won our first contract. So it's Woodlands Junior School in Redbridge. That was in 2001. Over the years, the business grew, word of mouth spread. There's this new company out that's helping schools. They're not selling very much. They're not doing any hardware. They're here for support. And the brand for support grew in Redbridge and then the neighbouring boroughs, and it went from there. Anyway, long story short, the business started growing. And I bought the guys out in 2006. They left the business in 2012, and we've made a fresh investment in growing a management team, getting onto the right frameworks, making sure we've got the right accreditations, the ISO 14001, the environmental, which is really important, Mrs. Holder. So we still support that school. So 15 years on, that school, Woodlands Junior School, is still a customer. Mrs. Holder went on to four other schools in that 15 years. She's taken us into every single one of those schools, and we work with every single one of those schools. And then she's on that. She'll be on that video that you're seeing behind me.
It's like when you're in the pub and you can't keep looking at the screen. Well, thank you very much. And if people want to follow what you're up to, Nick, what's your Twitter handle?
So mine is Nick Madhavji. So Nick Madhavji. So at Nick Madhavji or JOSCOS, the JOSCOS Twitter.
JOSCOS. Wonderful. Yeah. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Great. Thanks so much. Cheers.
It's Saturday and I'm here with Fergal Kilroy, who's the head of content at BET, and I'm really just hoping to find out a little bit about your experience across the week, and also in terms of EdTech trends, or you know, when you put the program together, a little bit of inside insight onto the thinking behind that.
It's been quite an amazing week. This is my first ever BET, and I started with the team a few months ago now. So actually it's been a baptism of fire. We kind of have talked to a lot of people about the program. One of the little pieces that I've been involved in is we've made a little mini movie just about kind of what people think about education and what the near future holds. And so we've kind of distilled that down to a little story that kind of plays before every session. And actually, I think what's been interesting about that exercise is it's kind of shown how education, they're interested in kind of cutting edge technologies, but when you compare it to some other sectors, the application of it is still far behind. So at this moment, if I look around the show floor and I'm seeing, you know, so much VR and AR, and I'm seeing kind of AI as well coming in, and part of the reason we got Priya to be co-chair, because I think, you know, that role of AI in education is going to be really important. But I think, and I can see that people find it like bewildering as to know how to apply it. And so part of our role is really to help them with that exercise. So earlier this week we had Class VR on, and we specifically asked them to talk about how you develop a lesson plan using VR and how do you deliver it, because it has to be relevant to everyone who's coming along. So from that perspective, I think everyone's very keen for education to be much more technologically advanced. It's just understanding the application of it.
And for you, what have been your own personal highlights of the week?
You know, the highlights, obviously you have magic moments like, you know, listening to Sir Ken Robinson, which is undoubtedly a magic moment. You know, that the energy in the arena yesterday was amazing. I hadn't ever really appreciated how popular he was. I mean, I've seen his talks before, but, you know, it just hadn't registered. So that last night was quite something. We are now opening in a call for content process, because a lot of the times people don't know how to put content on at BET, and so we have it already in place for some of the other theatres, but it's going to work across the show as a process, and what that means is that we'll be working with everyone who applies around kind of whether that content is meeting the needs of the audience, and if it is, how can we stage it really well, and what does that translate to. So it, in essence, it means that the quality will be coming of content will be coming through higher production values coupled with being sourced from the community and the surround.
And if people want to connect with you, which I'm sure they do after announcing the content application process, are you on Twitter? How can they connect with you?
Yes, I am on Twitter. I'm a listener rather than a broadcaster.
You're a lurker.
Yeah, not a lurker, a listener. Yes, I'm on Twitter, but I'm also, you know, we'll have the details up on the BET website, and we'll be putting it out across all the channels, so it's not going to be something that we're going to be quiet about, you know, because actually there's a lot of amazing things out there, and we want to uncover them.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for going.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and a shout out to Teacher's Fave Action Jackson, recorded live at the BET Teach Meet in the outro music. As he always says, and you can never say enough, dream big, act now, you're amazing.
You're amazing.
They don't believe you, sing it to the other person.
Dream big.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and a shout out to Teachers Fave Action Jackson, recorded live at the Bet Teach Meet in the outro music. As he always says, and you can never say enough, dream big, act now, you're amazing.